English Listening Comprehension Test, Spring 2012, Basic Level. This test is in four parts. Part 4 has separate directions. In Parts 1, 2, and 3, you will answer the questions asked in the booklet by choosing the best alternative answer according to what you have heard. Mark each answer on the optical answer sheet. The test is about to begin. Now you will hear part one twice. First, listen to it straight through.
Good morning. I'm Carol North, and I'm here to talk to you about cheating on exams. Now, who hasn't looked at their book or their mobile phone during some exam or test somewhere in their school? Probably nobody. I know I did that a few times, and I'm not very proud of it. I even got caught once. That wasn't a very pleasant experience. Today, I'm talking about cheating with Professor Richard Quinn. Professor Quinn lectures on ethics at the University of Central Florida. First, Professor Quinn, a personal question. Have you ever cheated on a test?
Well, yes, once, long ago in junior high school. But I learned a lesson. Our teacher, Mrs. Smith, came down hard on me, and it did me a world of good. I really appreciate what she did, even if it felt harsh at the time.
Now, tell me why you've become a hit on YouTube.
Well, it's a lecture I thought I'd never have to give at the university. There's always been one lecture that I hoped I would never have to give. But unfortunately, that hope ran out. I had to give just that lecture. After all, I've lectured on ethics for 22 years. This was the first time for this lecture.
What did you have to tell your students at the university?
I told them that I had found out that many of the students had been cheating. I had enough evidence from their exams, you know, statistical analysis, data analysis, other sorts of investigations. I could identify most of the cheats. So I proposed a deal.
Okay, a deal. So what kind of arrangement did you offer them?
I told them I didn't want to have to explain to their parents why they were thrown out of the university. So, if they would come to me and identify themselves as cheaters, as having copied on the exam, then I'd let them finish the rest of the course, and their grade would be what they got on the last part of the course. But they'd have to come to me and let me know they had cheated. 200 of them came forward and spoke to me. But mind you, there were more than 200 who had cheated on that course, so the story is not over yet.
Now listen to the same interview in three sections. Look at questions 1 and 2.
Good morning. I'm Carol North, and I'm here to talk to you about cheating on exams. Now, who hasn't looked at their book or their mobile phone during some exam or test somewhere in their school? Probably nobody. I know I did that a few times, and I'm not very proud of it. I even got caught once. That wasn't a very pleasant experience. Today, I'm talking about cheating with Professor Richard Quinn. Professor Quinn lectures on ethics at the University of Central Florida. First, Professor Quinn, a personal question. Have you ever cheated on a test?
Well, yes, once, long ago in junior high school. But I learned a lesson. Our teacher, Mrs. Smith, came down hard on me, and it did me a world of good. I really appreciate what she did, even if it felt harsh at the time.
Answer questions 1 and 2. Then look at question 3.
Now, tell me why you've become a hit on YouTube.
Well, it's a lecture I thought I'd never have to give at the university. There's always been one lecture that I hoped I would never have to give. But unfortunately, that hope ran out. I had to give just that lecture. After all, I've lectured on ethics for 22 years. This was the first time for this lecture.
Answer question 3, then look at questions 4 and 5.
What did you have to tell your students at the university?
I told them that I had found out that many of the students had been cheating. I had enough evidence from their exams, you know, statistical analysis, data analysis, other sorts of investigations. I could identify most of the cheats. So I proposed a deal.
Okay, a deal. So what kind of arrangement did you offer them?
I told them I didn't want to have to explain to their parents why they were thrown out of the university. So, if they would come to me and identify themselves as cheaters, as having copied on the exam, then I'd let them finish the rest of the course, and their grade would be what they got on the last part of the course. But they'd have to come to me and let me know they had cheated. 200 of them came forward and spoke to me. But mind you, there were more than 200 who had cheated on that course. So the story is not over yet.
Answer questions 4 and 5. This is the second part of the test. You will hear this part twice. Listen to this part straight through.
In a moment, you're going to hear a talk about winning the lottery. Here's Charles to speak on what it takes to win the lottery and what winning means to people.
Well, the first thing you should know if you want to win the lottery is that it's better to have some names than others. You're more likely to win. If you've got an unusual name, like Peaches or Apple or Xiaoping Moonshine, you're not a likely winner. If you have a good old-fashioned Bible stock name that most people can pronounce, then you're more likely to win. You should actually be called John or Margaret, and then you have a good shot at becoming a lottery millionaire. Of course, all these names have been very popular over the last few decades. That might have something to do with it. And then, about winning the lottery. Neil Chester won $8.5 million on the National Lottery, and this happened 5 weeks after he lost his job. He and his wife Kate then did what everyone does when they hit the jackpot. They bought their dream house, 1,000 square metres and 25 rooms. They also added some basic necessities for lottery millionaires, such as an indoor swimming pool, sauna and cinema room. And after spending £2.5 million buying and fixing up their home, they discovered something else. How expensive running it was. And then they were complaining there were rooms they never used. Neil's wife, Kate, said she always wanted to stay at home and raise the children and be with them. In a small house, they were always all together. And now she has to make a point of finding them. They don't even watch TV together, as they're all in different rooms. Now that's life down at the manor. But there are other stories as well. Maria Murray won £1 million on a lottery scratch card. She's a 41-year-old mother of four. She took 2 days off work and then got up at 5 a.m. To start her shift at 6 a.m. She has a £5-an-hour cafe job, serving fry-ups and cups of tea to factory workers. She's not spent a penny of the win, and couldn't wait to return to the greasy cafe, where she earns just £50 a week. She reported that if she stayed at home or bought a big posh house, she'd be bored out of her head and wouldn't know what to do. And as for the cafe, she's got a firm opinion on that too. It's a real old-fashioned British cafe, full of good people that you won't find anywhere else. And she doesn't care a bit that some people might think she's mad. She enjoys the place because all her friends are there. She's also used to hard work. So yesterday she woke up at 5 a.m. and walked half a mile to serve cups of tea to factory workers. And listened to her favourite 80s artist Prince on the radio. And in Dewsbury, West Yorkshire, there's Susan Crossland. She and her husband Michael nearly missed the six numbers which brought her £1.2 million one weekend because they were celebrating winning £74 on three other lines on their lotto card. Susan said that they had checked the previous four lines, and there they had already won £10, and then they got two lines of four correct numbers, which brought them £32 for each. They had already started to celebrate those four numbers and were checking how much they had won, and so nearly missed the last line with the six numbers. Susan is a mother of four. The couple said the money will help with their plans to start fostering children. You know, take care of children who need a temporary home. Helping out two or three unfortunate foster children would be very close to their hearts. When the couple were asked what they did on the day after their big win, well, Michael went off to work at Kershaw's Dairy. His working day starts at 3:30 a.m. and he said, "It's a nice job. Nice people I work with. There's five of us, and we're just a good set of lads working together." And Susan? Well, she went to Netto's supermarket. But let me get back to where I started this little talk. How do you win the lottery? One of the things that helps is to come from the small town of Ilford. You may think that the only thing to recommend the place is its good rail connections, but for decades it's been the number one place for lotto winners. One top win, usually in the £1 million category, has come in for every 6,700 people. Now that's unusual. One of the winners in Ilford summed it up by saying, "We're all quite down to earth in Ilford. The many, many lotto millionaires know who the others are, but they don't hang around with each other. And they eat the same food they always did, not stuff like caviar or salmon, more like fish fingers. And that's what it's like in Ilford, the lotto winner's paradise. I think I'll move there. It may improve my luck. Well, who knows?"
Now listen to the same talk in five sections. Look at questions 6 and 7.
In a moment, you're going to hear a talk about winning the lottery. Here's Charles to speak on what it takes to win the lottery and what winning means to people.
Well, the first thing you should know if you want to win the lottery is that it's better to have some names than others. You're more likely to win. If you've got an unusual name like Peaches or Apple or Xiaoping Moonshine, you're not a likely winner. If you have a good old-fashioned Bible stock name that most people can pronounce, then you're more likely to win. You should actually be called John or Margaret, and then you have a good shot at becoming a lottery millionaire. Of course, all these names have been very popular over the last few decades. That might have something to do with it.
Answer questions 6 and 7, then look at questions 8 and 9.
And then, about winning the lottery. Neil Chester won $8.5 million on the national lottery, and this happened 5 weeks after he lost his job. He and his wife, Kate, then did what everyone does when they hit the jackpot. They bought their dream house, 1,000 square metres and 25 rooms. They also added some basic necessities for lottery millionaires, such as an indoor swimming pool, sauna and cinema room. And after spending £2.5 million buying and fixing up their home, they discovered something else. How expensive running it was. And then they were complaining there were rooms they never used. Neil's wife, Kate, said she always wanted to stay at home and raise the children and be with them. In a small house, they were always all together. And now she has to make a point of finding them. They don't even watch TV together, as they're all in different rooms. That's life down at the manor.
Answer questions 8 and 9. Look at questions 10 and 11.
But there are other stories as well. Maria Murray won £1 million on a lottery scratch card. She's a 41-year-old mother of four. She took 2 days off work and then got up at 5 a.m. To start her shift at 6 a.m. She has a £5 an hour cafe job, serving fry-ups and cups of tea to factory workers. She's not spent a penny of the win and couldn't wait to return to the greasy cafe, where she earns just £50 a week. She reported that if she stayed at home or bought a big posh house, she'd be bored out of her head and wouldn't know what to do. And as for the cafe, she's got a firm opinion on that too. It's a real old-fashioned British cafe full of good people that you won't find anywhere else. And she doesn't care a bit that some people might think she's mad. She enjoys the place because all her friends are there. She's also used to hard work. So yesterday she woke up at 5 a.m. and walked half a mile to serve cups of tea to factory workers. And listened to her favourite 80s artist Prince on the radio.
Answer questions 10 and 11, then look at questions 12 and 13.
And in Dewsbury, West Yorkshire, there's Susan Crossland. She and her husband Michael nearly missed the six numbers which brought her £1.2 million one weekend because they were celebrating winning £74 on three other lines on their lotto card. Susan said that they had checked the previous four lines, and there they had already won £10, and then they got two lines of four correct numbers, which brought them £32 for each. They had already started to celebrate those four numbers and were checking how much they had won, and so nearly missed the last line with the six numbers. Susan is a mother of four. The couple said the money will help with their plans to start fostering children. You know, take care of children who need a temporary home. Helping out two or three unfortunate foster children would be very close to their hearts. When the couple were asked what they did on the day after their big win, well, Michael went off to work at Kershaw's Dairy. His working day starts at 3:30 a.m. and he said, "It's a nice job. Nice people I work with. There's five of us, and we're just a good set of lads working together." And Susan? Well, she went to Netto's supermarket.
Answer questions 12 and 13. Look at questions 14 and 15.
But let me get back to where I started this little talk. How do you win the lottery? One of the things that helps is to come from the small town of Ilford. You may think that the only thing to recommend the place is its good rail connections, but for decades it's been the number one place for lotto winners. One top win, usually in the £1 million category, has come in for every 6,700 people. Now that's unusual. One of the winners in Ilford summed it up by saying, "We're all quite down to earth in Ilford. The many, many lotto millionaires know who the others are, but they don't hang around with each other. And they eat the same food they always did, not stuff like caviar or salmon, more like fish fingers. And that's what it's like in Ilford, the lotto winners' paradise. I think I'll move there. It may improve my luck. Well, who knows?"
Answer questions 14 and 15. This is the third part of the test. In this part, you will hear 10 short dialogues. You will hear each of them once only. Look at question 16.
It's a real pity that Scobie Grill was shut down for good last week.
Yeah, things won't be the same. That was the end of an era. Scobie's was the last place in town to get real home-cooked food.
I remember when we went in there for lunch once, the pot roast was so good. And when we looked at the evening menu, we noticed they were serving salmon.
So we went back for dinner that evening, and it was marvelous.
It sure was. And it was only 3 blocks down the street.
Answer question 16, then look at question 17.
Did you read in the paper that people in the town of Richmond want to stop a group of buskers from playing in the market square?
No, why was that?
Well, they only play one song, "When the Saints Go Marching In," on the accordion.
Oh, I see.
They play that one song for 8 hours a day, every day of the year, and they play it very badly. They stand right in front of the local newsagents. When people go in to get their papers and magazines, they constantly complain to the girl working there.
Well, yes, that is a problem then, isn't it?
Answer question 17. Look at question 18.
The machines which sell Cokes and other drinks are getting smarter.
Smarter? What in the world do you mean? A machine is a machine. You put in your money, push the button, and a bottle comes out.
Actually, there's a Japanese company that's invented a machine that uses face recognition technology.
It recognizes people's faces? Does it know who you are?
No, not at all. But it does analyze your face. If you're a man, it will recommend a coffee drink. The machine can tell if you are a man or a woman, young or old. For young women, the machine suggests tea drinks or other sweet drinks. It's all based on market research.
I don't know. I really don't want a Coke machine to talk to me.
Answer question 18, then look at question 19.
Have you heard what happened when Lisa took her children to the pond to feed the ducks?
No. Did one of the children fall in?
No, nothing like that. They're fine. But Lisa was given a warning by the city gardener.
A warning? What for?
Because she fed the ducks white bread, old bread she had left over from home. The city gardener told her she should have fed them whole grain bread or brown bread of some sort.
Ah, and what did she say about that?
Well, she simply said the ducks didn't seem to mind. They gladly ate the white bread.
Answer question 19. Look at question 20.
Have you ever looked at Google Street View?
Yeah, looked up some of my friends' houses. I even saw Sally's car out front of her house.
Well, George just sent me an interesting link. In one suburb in Berlin, you can see a baby being born right on the street.
Nah, that was something that was done by some students from the university.
No, the mother's lying there on the sidewalk, and a medic from an ambulance is right there beside her helping get the baby out. You can see the ambulance, too.
No way. The whole thing was put on by students. They even borrowed the ambulance. You can read about it on the net.
Answer question 20, then look at question 21.
They've come up with a really good idea in Christchurch, New Zealand.
Oh, yeah?
In the main streets of the city, they've started playing classical music through loudspeakers, rather than the rock and roll they used to play.
Okay.
The year before they started this classical music experiment, there were 16 drug and alcohol-related robberies. Now it's down to zero. And the previous year, shopkeepers had to call guards 35 times. That's down to zero, too. So now people feel safe sitting around the city square. Maybe they should try it here. What do you think?
Answer question 21. Look at question 22.
Not all zoos are the same.
What do you mean by saying that?
Well, the Tokyo Zoo closes down for 2 months every year to give the animals a little break from the people.
What's that? I've never heard of a zoo doing anything like that.
Well, you see, the zookeepers think that the animals need a rest from all the crowds of people, you know, to get them calmed down and sort of back to normal, more or less.
Okay, I can understand that.
Answer question 22, then look at question 23.
When you come to think of it, the government seems to be extremely efficient.
I know. It looks like it's very professional, with people in dozens of departments and hundreds of offices doing their work to the very highest standards.
But it's only after you've worked for a few years in one of these offices, like the two of us, that you realise it's all running on nothing but dumb luck. There's no skill involved whatsoever.
Right. No one knows what they're doing. And I don't mean you, you know. I mean, everyone is trying to look busy so the boss won't get angry.
And everyone is simply guessing what should be done next.
Answer question 23. Look at question 24.
Did you hear what a man did in Atlanta, Georgia?
Yeah, sure. Well, maybe. Do you mean when the man held up a grocery store with a wooden stick?
Yeah, that's the story. And then he made his getaway on a riding lawnmower.
And he hit one of the clerks with the stick. He bruised her arm.
And his lawnmower went so slowly, a guard ran after him and caught him, after he'd gone only about 100 yards across the parking lot.
Answer question 24, then look at question 25.
Fact is stranger than fiction.
Yes, it is. What have you found now?
Well, in the middle of World War II, the Nazi Foreign Office in Berlin ordered its diplomats to gather evidence on a dog.
On a dog?
Yes, on a dog. As if they weren't in the midst of a war. The dog's name was Jackie, and he was owned by Tor Borre, a businessman in the city of Tampere, and somewhere in the middle of Finland. And Jackie was said to raise his paw in a Hitler-type salute. Whenever someone would give him the command, Heil Hitler.
Oh, come off it.
And the Nazis came up with a plan for ruining Tor Borre's business. But they didn't go forward with these plans, and Tor Borre became a very successful businessman.
Answer question 25. This is the fourth part of the test. There are five sections. Each section is a separate piece of news. You will hear each section twice, and then you will have time to answer that section. Then you will go on to the next section. You will write in Finnish or Swedish. You must write your answers on the special answer sheet. Read question A. Question A, listen to this section.
Divine Association is committed to helping out in the community in Blue Earth County, Minnesota. You can help us. We regularly accept donations of clean, gently used furniture for every room in the house. We take things like lamps, dishes, furniture, good bedding and towels, bookshelves. All the profit from selling these gifts goes to assisting people with long-term health needs in Blue Earth County.
Now listen to this again, and then answer the question.
Divine Association is committed to helping out in the community in Blue Earth County, Minnesota. You can help us. We regularly accept donations of clean, gently used furniture for every room in the house. We take things like lamps, dishes, furniture, good bedding and towels, bookshelves. All the profit from selling these gifts goes to assisting people with long-term health needs in Blue Earth County.
Read question B. Question B. Listen to this section.
The people I'm closest to are, I'm guessing, similar to those closest to you. They have good days and they have bad days. But looking at Facebook, everyone has great days. Wonderful day after marvelous day. On Facebook, they've just got back from a marvelous vacation in Thailand. They don't tweet you that they are now in a hospital being treated for a serious stomach problem. On Facebook, they've just been to a fabulous technological conference. If you meet them in person, they haven't had a decent night of sleep in months. You know what I mean.
Now listen to this again, and then answer the question.
The people I'm closest to are, I'm guessing, similar to those closest to you. They have good days and they have bad days. But looking at Facebook, everyone has great days. Wonderful day after marvelous day. On Facebook, they've just got back from a marvelous vacation in Thailand. They don't tweet you that they are now in a hospital being treated for a serious stomach problem. On Facebook, they've just been to a fabulous technological conference. If you meet them in person, they haven't had a decent night of sleep in months. You know what I mean.
Read question C. Question C. Listen to this section.
In July, I returned from 3 years of travel and work in Asia. I applied for a law course at university. I'm a very sociable person. I thought the decision to move back to England would mean I could build up a reasonable life. Now I'm regretting it. I have no friends. Due to my housing situation, my housemates change monthly. All of this is affecting my ability to study. I miss my old life in Asia, but I also want to move forward.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
In July, I returned from 3 years of travel and work in Asia. I applied for a law course at university. I'm a very sociable person. I thought the decision to move back to England would mean I could build up a reasonable life. Now I'm regretting it. I have no friends. Due to my housing situation, my housemates change monthly. All of this is affecting my ability to study. I miss my old life in Asia, but I also want to move forward.
Read question D. Question D. Listen to this section.
They have a reputation for strength, organization, and teamwork. A study of Central American leafcutter ants has shown that the younger and more active members of the ant colony are given the toughest job of cutting through the leaves they harvest. Their sharp young teeth do this job efficiently, but as they get older, their teeth become relatively worn and rounded. But rather than being retired or killed, the aging ants are given a new role more suited to their physical abilities. The former leaf cutters become leaf carriers, so they transport the leaves back to the colony where they are harvested for food. This saves a great deal of energy in the ant colony.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
They have a reputation for strength, organization, and teamwork. A study of Central American leafcutter ants has shown that the younger and more active members of the ant colony are given the toughest job of cutting through the leaves they harvest. Their sharp young teeth do this job efficiently, but as they get older, their teeth become relatively worn and rounded. But rather than being retired or killed, the aging ants are given a new role more suited to their physical abilities. The former leaf cutters become leaf carriers, so they transport the leaves back to the colony where they are harvested for food. This saves a great deal of energy in the ant colony.
Read question E. Question E. Listen to this section.
Sue Line sits in a wheelchair. She was paralyzed 40 years ago. But just 4 years ago, she got a dog, Sandy. 4-year-old Sandy has proved she really is a girl's best friend. The 4-year-old doggy goes with Sue to the supermarket, and the dog puts all of the shopping in a bag, which she then carries around in her mouth. And Sandy also loads the washing machine, separating the dirty clothes into dark and light loads, and locking the machine door before the cycle begins. Sue bought Sandy when she was just a few weeks old from a friend, and hoped that her new pet would provide her with some companionship. But she soon realized what a clever dog Sandy is.
Now listen to this again and then answer the question.
Sue Line sits in a wheelchair. She was paralyzed 40 years ago. But just 4 years ago, she got a dog, Sandy. 4-year-old Sandy has proved she really is a girl's best friend. The 4-year-old doggy goes with Sue to the supermarket, and the dog puts all of the shopping in a bag, which she then carries around in her mouth. And Sandy also loads the washing machine, separating the dirty clothes into dark and light loads, and locking the machine door before the cycle begins. Sue bought Sandy when she was just a few weeks old from a friend, and hoped that her new pet would provide her with some companionship. But she soon realized what a clever dog Sandy is.
This is the end of the test. You will now have 8 minutes in which to blacken with a pencil the ovals indicating your answers and to check the written answers. Remember to make sure you have written the following information on your answer sheet: your name and number, and the name and number of your school. In addition, make sure that the information needed for the exam has been carefully marked in. Thank you.